Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From NFL Network, their insider, Tom Pelissero. Good afternoon, Tom.
Fellas, what's going on?
Well, the draft is right around the corner, and in Cleveland, that's usually one of the biggest days of the year, Tom. But instead, it's kind of gone to the back burner in an interesting shift here this offseason. So Browns fans not as excited about the draft as they have been in the past.
Well, if you're not as excited about the draft, spend Thursday night on NFL.com Googling old Odell Beckham Jr. highlights. That should take up your time, right?
Well, that's exactly right.
The thing is, Tom, is the fact that the Browns don't have a first-round pick now, it sort of takes some of the luster out of the excitement. I mean, who knows? Dorsey could trade back into the first round. There's been talks about that. Obviously, it's been talked about on your network, what the Browns are going to do. But it's just, it's kind of refreshing, frankly, Tom, because in the past, it's always what quarterback in the Browns draft? Are they going to find their franchise quarterback? And what we saw a couple days ago with the schedule release, that kind of felt like the draft because people are picking this team to win 10, 11, 12 ball games. And to me, I'm kind of doing the same thing, but I'm cautiously optimistic about the team, trying to get myself to calm down a little bit. Are we too excited about the Browns?
I mean, if you're sitting there predicting 12-4, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but you're setting the bar pretty high.
Agreed.
For a franchise that's been through a lot. I mean, certainly there was a lot of good signs in the second half of last season, and you saw Baker Mayfield showed the game's not too big for him. That's a huge deal, because how many rookie quarterbacks do we see thrust in year one who just don't look like they belong? In Mayfield's case, he did, and that was at a time that he didn't have Odell Beckham Jr. His favorite target, Rashard Higgins, missed a good chunk of the season right when they seemed to be developing some chemistry. They, of course, had a transition at the running back position. You saw Chubb come into his own. You got some bright young playmakers on defense, including Denzel Ward, Myles Garrett. I mean, there's a lot to like with this team, but, I mean, the NFL's hard, man. The NFL's hard to win a whole bunch of games. And it'll just be interesting to see how this entire thing comes together, what kind of identity the defense takes on, now that it's Steve Wilkes and not Greg Williams calling the plays, and then just how Freddie Kitchens balances everything. You know, being an NFL head coach, there's a lot of other responsibilities. Of course, he's going to be heavily involved in the offense as well. It's just such a unique case because you're right. I mean, for a team to have not won, and as long as the Browns have not won, and yes, I'm aware they won games last year, but you know, to have gone through this type of a stretch and now to have these high expectations. I remember Mike McCarthy, the former Packers coach, saying at one of might have been his first introductory press conference, saying the biggest challenge we'll have here is handling success. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for the Browns, when you start winning, you know, handling success can be a challenge for teams, and there's going to be a little bit of that even before they set foot on the field in 2019.
Talking with Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, he joins on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. When you talk about the Browns going into this year, how many questions do you have about Freddie Kitchens' ability to make the seamless transition from coordinator to head coach?
Well, I think it's a challenge for anybody, especially, you know, a guy like Freddie who really hadn't been an offensive coordinator, you know, interim offensive coordinator for all that long. It's, like I said, it's a lot of responsibilities because it's not simply the football stuff too. As the head coach, you're the face of the organization. You have all these other people who are coming into your office on a daily basis. They need different things, trying to juggle all that. You know, Freddie strikes me as a guy, and I don't know him well, but in my, you know, limited dealings with him and talking to people who know him, everybody says he's not somebody who it's going to, you know, the weight of the world is going to be on his shoulders. He kind of has a easygoing manner about him, but it's a different job to stand up in front of that team every day, you know, good times and bad, and be the, you know, the main voice who's delivering the message of what they're going to be, especially when, again, in this unique situation where you have more expectations than any team I can remember 2 years after going 0-16. I mean, this is going to be something different, but I think the one thing that he showed and one thing, big thing he had going for him in interviewing for the head coaching job in the first place was he does have that connection and that trust with his young quarterback, Baker Mayfield, and that is going to be the most important relationship in that building for the foreseeable future.
Tom Pelissero is with us from the NFL Network. Tom, I typically wouldn't have a problem with this if the player had been here and he's established. But the whole voluntary workout thing, for me, it kind of means more with Odell. I feel like he should be here around his teammates, getting to know them, getting to learn the system and all of that. And I don't know if he's going to show up at any point until it's mandatory. Do you think it's a big deal?
Well, I mean, you just have to go back to the way that the collective bargaining agreement is written. I mean, these are voluntary, and I know that they're
not to Tom Coughlin.
The wink, nod, mandatory nature of them, but they are technically voluntary. Of course, any coach wants everybody possible in the building, but with a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., he's a little different personality. His lifestyle is different than most people in the NFL in terms of being like an international celebrity. He's got other stuff he can do, and the CBA is designed to let guys kind of go do what they want. I mean, it's not like he's in danger of getting cut if he feels like the best way for him to be ready to play the season is to go do his own thing, train with his own guys, and come back ready to go for the mandatory mini camp. It's kind of hard to argue that. I mean, it's not uncommon. Julio Jones sat out last year and had another 800 catches or whatever he had. These things happen. Yes, it's a new system. There's all that part of it. The developing rhythm is a big thing too, but you're still in these early portions too. I mean, they can barely even do anything on the field at this point. We'll see where he's at in terms of the OTAs and the minicamp and how much of that he participates in.
Tom, how do you think all this Duke Johnson stuff is going to shake out?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had sensed and I had heard that there were multiple teams that were in on Duke Johnson, but also that the Browns were not in any rush to give the guy away. Mm-hmm. First off, they wanted to see what became of Kareem Hunt, and of course his suspension came down. And in the short term, Duke Johnson's not a really expensive player. He's a good player who brings an element to your offense that you maybe don't entirely get from some of the other players on the roster. I don't blame John Dorsey at all for saying, if I don't get a whatever it might be, a fourth round pick, a third round pick, if I don't get something of significant value, I'm just not in any rush to move the guy. If at any point he does become available, there are certainly teams out there that I think would be in that mix. The Vikings being one potential one. I know that there were rumors about the Bears for a while, although they made some moves that maybe addressed that too. And they would have some suitors for him, but if it's a late round pick for Duke Johnson, and that guy might make a difference the first eight games for you, it's a tough argument to say you're just going to let that guy go for nothing.
Should we feel bad for Josh Rosen?
He's in a unique spot. I don't think that you feel bad for him. I think that you understand that it's an uncomfortable situation. I mean, imagine him every morning waking up. He turns on NFL Network, of course, because that's what he does every morning. And, sees more talk about Kyler Murray fitting in with the Cardinals. He's got to go to work. Everybody says he's been the first one in the building, but he's got to roll in there. Try to be that guy, try to be the dude, make this his team, learn the offense, and all the while knowing in the back of his head the odds that he's still a member of the Cardinals by a week from today, may not, certainly not 100%, and they may be far lower than that. It's a challenging situation for him. There's no doubt about it. A smart guy, talented pocket passer, went through a lot last year, took a ton of hits. The offensive coordinator changed. He's been through a lot, there's no doubt. I mean, it's tough to say you feel bad for the guy, but is this an ideal spot for him to be in? No. And frankly, yeah. I think that we've all tended to focus on the places that Rosen could go and play in the short term. I wouldn't be surprised if we're also talking about some of those places, maybe somebody bringing him in as a low-cost backup, in a potential trade, whether it be New England or the Chargers or somebody who's got a quarterback already, may play another 3-4 years, and kind of like the Jacoby Brissett trade a few years ago, when he went to Indianapolis. Different situation because Andrew Luck was hurt, but the Colts haven't wanted to give away Jacoby Brissett because he's a cheap backup who's played in the league, and that might be Rosen's lot in life for the next couple of years, depending exactly what the Cardinals decide to do.
Here's the question I have, and it's kind of why I sort of feel bad for him. Have they communicated anything with him, or is he just kind of in the dark as to, I have no idea what my future is?
Well, you can bet that there have been conversations since he's been back in the building for off-season workouts. I mean, my understanding has been, since going back to when the Murray rumors initially started up, was the communication that Rosen had gotten was that they like him a lot. And that's true. I mean, I've heard that Cliff Kingsbury really does like Josh Rosen. I've actually been making calls this week because I'm working on my annual quarterback projection story that'll come out next week on NFL.com. And I've had people bring up, they're like, Josh Rosen's a good fit. for Cliff Kingsbury. The issue is Kyler Murray is the perfect fit for that offense. And so a rare opportunity to be sitting at number one, be able to go get that guy. If in fact they do it, then, you know, could they keep him around? Yes. You know, he doesn't have any guaranteed money due until he's got a training camp reporting bonus. He could be your cheap backup. You could even have him compete in year one, but that's a really awkward type of a situation, even for two guys in Rosen and Murray who actually happen to know each other. And, you know, they wouldn't be instant enemies, but in terms of professionally, they would be at odds from day one.
Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, our guest. Are you convinced that the Cardinals go with Murray at number one?
I'm not 100% on anything at this point. Just based on the number of different things that could still happen up at the top of the draft. I mean, it does not sound like a trade is something that's going to happen, but certainly we've talked about this on TV recently. You know, if there were a situation where the 49ers hypothetically want Joey Bosa and you can convince them that they need to move up a spot to get Joey Bosa, do you trade down? Do you trade even further down, try to get Kyler later? There's still all those possibilities. You just don't know, you know, what's going to happen on the other end of the phone when you pick it up. That's why there's never been any like real urgency or motivation for the Cardinals to come out and say, okay, you got us, we're drafting Kyler Murray. No, you say nothing, you bring in the other guys, you examine all the scenarios. In the end, even if your plan all along is to take Kyler Murray, somebody calls and offers you four ones to move up to the number one pick, you don't hang up immediately, right? You check it out, especially because they do actually like Josh Rosen in that building. They just seem to like Murray more.
Tom, the report comes down today. I think Ian had it on Twitter about the Raiders letting go of their scouts prior to the draft, and because they didn't trust them. Well, to me, I kind of think that their point has been proven by this coming out, right? I mean, obviously somebody's talking there behind the scenes, and at least it seems like maybe Mike and Gruden are on the same page.
Well, there's been a lot of things that have been unusual in Oakland for a number of months now. Just, you know, everything that I've heard just about kind of the way the operation works, and going back to last year when Ian actually reported that, you know, John Gruden and his coaches had kind of a different draft board and the scouts were doing another draft board. And yeah, I mean, the message that Mike Mayock delivered to the scouts today was, you know, in short, as I understand it, we don't know who to trust. So you're all going home for the week, and you'll get a call the day after the draft telling you if you still have a job. And that's tough because you got a lot of guys in that on that scouting staff who have been there a long time. I mean, yep. Al Davis guys who go back a ways, and you know it's a harsh ending, especially when you poured everything personally and professionally for 11 plus months into grading this class. Now you're not even going to be, you know, you're not even going to be in the room. You're not going to be around the building. You're just going to find out later whether or not you still have a job. It's tough, but, you know, the expectation always has been that really it's going to be Mayock and Gruden in a room, Gruden with the final say on what exactly they do. And when you have three first-round draft picks, there is a little bit more strategy, for lack of a better word, than there would be if you just have one first-round pick, because you've got the ammunition. Do you want to move around the board? Mm-hmm. You want to try to move up? Do you move back and collect more picks? There's a lot of different things you can do when you got three firsts. And obviously they don't get the sense that everybody there is bought in, so they clean them all out.
So the Browns don't have a first-round pick. Their first pick is slotted for number 49 overall. Tom, do you believe that the Browns will move back into the first round, and do you believe they have the ammunition to do it?
I mean, 49, that's a ways. I mean,
right.
You're talking
right.
about significant. I haven't looked at the draft value chart, but, I mean, that would be a big-time trade. Now, I guess it depends in part where John Dorsey sees the hot spots. You know, he trained under Ron Wolf, you know, worked with Ted Thompson. The way that they do the draft board is, you know, a little bit unique. And of course you got Elliot Wolf and Alonzo Highsmith and other people there who come out of that same program. I mean, the Browns have, if I'm not mistaken, 2/3 and 3/5, right? Plus they got their own picks. So, I can't remember if they moved another one in the Beckham deal or not, but they've got a lot of picks. So they do have some ammunition, but to come all the way from the middle of the second all the way up into the first is a long way to go. You know, I think that there's several positions that will be really interesting. They don't need any wide receivers, but those guys are going to go at some point. Nobody in the league seems to know when they go. The cornerbacks is another really muddled type of a position where nobody knows exactly where they're going to go. I mean, it depends in part on what exactly does John Dorsey need to add to his roster. And the, you know, the thankful part for all the Browns fans listening is it's the first time you didn't go down the Browns roster and go, they can kind of use everything, right?
right.
You kind of, you know, you're not going to take a receiver. You're not going to take a running back. You're not going to take a quarterback up high. Offensive line, you can always use some help there, although I think there's going to be, there's really only one left tackle on the board. There's going to be a run on the interior lineman, I believe, in the late 20s, kind of like last year. A bunch of those guys are going to come off. You know, on the defensive side, a ton of defensive linemen are going to go early in the draft. There is believed to be, from people I've talked to, the strength of the draft is kind of through the second and third rounds. Mm-hmm. They'll have some opportunities to get good football players. It just won't be those frontline types of guys that you're in line to get when you're perpetually drafting in the top 10.
Tom, good stuff. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the draft, buddy.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, fellas.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.